Okay. We're good to go.
Oh, I'm on.
We're back.
We're back, guys.
We're back. We'll take a 2-week hiatus here.
2-week hiatus, but now we're back. We've actually been getting a lot of people asking where the hell the podcasts have been.
I think a lot of people use it over the weekend.
They're catching.
Yeah. And so, I've had a handful of people kind of ask. And John Drogettis, if you're listening to this, he texted me on Tuesday. I don't know about the mic quality right now, apparently.
The mic quality?
He's got some better mic quality for us.
Apparently, he did say he would bring us a nice mic. So
I don't know. But this room in general is echoey.
Yeah, this is like one of those rooms that, like, I think with the best mic, it's still not going to be like...
I don't know. Like, I'm not a podcast guru by any means, and I'm not going to drop thousands of dollars on a
room.
I don't want to cuss already in being in the podcast, but on a damn podcast where... you gotta like restructure the whole office because it's echoey. Because I think because of the walls and like the we don't have like soft flooring and all the sound, but it kind of bounces off.
It's like bouncing from that to the wood to the wall. Like,
isn't there a way you can put like egg cartons on the wall?
I've seen that. I don't know if that's a myth or not. I don't know. I feel like that's a myth, but it might not be a myth. I don't know.
I feel like John would have, because I mean band playing, he would probably know about
making
the noise.
Well, John's got. I think John's like. I think I babysat his dog one day, and I think in his room he's got like.
I was gonna say he didn't ask you to babysit his kids.
No, don't ask me to babysit your kids, guys. Maybe Sydney, not me. But he has like those fancy egg cartons. It's not actual egg cartons. It's like actual.
Fancy. It's like black, like a black matte kind of looking deal.
I want to say it's like black or like a purple, like.
Because I want to say I've looked on Amazon before, and they sell like this almost like a wall panel.
Yeah.
And. It reminds me, at least like on the, you hang up on the wall, like, and it almost looks like, I don't know how I can relate to it. It looks like old school, like bedding things where it's like kind of wavy, like this cushiony, wavy thing.
Okay.
I don't know. Like it's,
yeah, I know you're talking about that.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'm not a sound technician and podcast thing. Like I said, I'm not going to drop thousands of dollars on a podcast. But that's the only bad thing about this room is that it gets echoed. I know like the first initial podcast really sounded like dog shit.
Well, I know our first couple of episodes were
sounded
kind of tough.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to use a different mic. We have like headsets now.
What mic did we use?
It was like that damn just on the
oh,
desk
they just sat there.
Yeah, okay, just sat there, and so it really caught all the echo. At least it's kind of somewhat minimized. I know the sound quality is not the best.
Dude, this has got to be like. Number 60 or something.
I don't know. We're no Joe Rogan podcast.
No, but like I feel like we still have a lot.
We're getting there, and like, and then even with this one, before we started this podcast, I mean, I don't even know how much of a subject we're even going to go into today.
Yeah,
because we're just kind of bullshitting really more than anything else. I know, like one thing Kel wants me to talk about today is my surgery.
Oh, we got to talk about the surgery, man. Got to do it.
Tuesday will make 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks. Yeah, you had it on
what,
Tuesday, right?
Tuesday last week.
So
yeah.
Like 2 weeks.
So I'm like a week and a half. 2 days. In, like 10 days in, something like that.
Well, the big question is pretty much what I've been getting is...
How?
How?
And
I feel like that's kind of a long answer.
It's not like one individual instance, to be honest. So if I can pinpoint like one individual... And it's not like in like an exact moment. I can kind of like maybe...
A time period almost?
Yeah, to maybe like to like an individual day, potentially. And it's not like 100% certain that this is like when it happened. So during COVID, you know, we were still working at home at the time. Mm-hmm. I had bought a new pair of shoes. And me and Caleb were working out. It was like a Saturday morning. And I wore the shoes, and we had like a decent amount of running program that day, and I think like some like jumping of some kind. And I had wore those shoes, and like I said, nothing in particular in the workout that ever like was like, oh, that hurt or like that. I just remember either like that afternoon or the next day, my knee maybe being a little bit swollen, mm-hmm. I guess. So that was like 3 years ago. And so I couldn't, like after that kind of instance, I remember like my knee kind of swelling, and like I would go through bouts of it swelling up more than others throughout, you know, the past 3 years. And
like depending on what you did that
depending
day.
On what I did, and more so like, so the only thing that would like really, really hurt like in the moment is like trying to like physically sit on my heels, right? Like, okay. You're like in a kneeling position,
you
sit down and you like sit on your heels. I couldn't do that on my left knee because it felt like there was like so much pressure inside that
knee. Your knee was gonna like pop.
Yeah. And so, but I could still squat not too bad. Like getting, depending on how swollen it was, like if I was, like my knee was like really swollen, then squatting would be a little bit difficult at times, but it was just kind of here or there. And like, I could even squat below parallel without too much pain. It was a little uncomfortable, not bad. And the only thing that would kind of trigger it to make it kind of swell would be like any running or jumping. And more so like, honestly, running is obviously, but like jumping in a way like double unders or like bounding box jumps. Box. Like if I just kind of started doing stepping, it'd be manageable. And so I've been kind of dealing with that for about 3 years. And then late February, all of a sudden I got to the point in time when, and that was just like kind of like managing my workouts here or there, maybe bike instead of run,
yeah.
Or maybe just kind of managing that volume by doing a running in a week, or maybe just don't jump that day, whatever it may be. But it wasn't like a humongous shift. For the most part, I could still do 90% of the stuff I wanted to do. Then late February, just randomly out of the blue, just kind of walk around the house, it would start giving me pain walking around. And then a couple of days later, it started catching on me to where...
So you would like lock almost?
Yeah, like where I'd go to like stand, like and, so stupid. So literally laying in bed, and wake up in the middle of the night, and I kind of go to like yawn and stretch, and that's when it caught.
It locked
the first time. It locked on me in the middle of the night. I was like, what the shit was that? And the next day came to the gym, and I was kind of like, it was kind of the back of my mind, like it was kind of weird. And then it was kind of feeling funky, kind of weird. I went to go do a thruster. Squatted, felt fine. Went to go stand up out of the thruster, and it caught again. And I couldn't lock out my leg. And so...
obviously, you didn't do thrusters that day.
So, I also didn't do the workout. So, at that point in time, I was like, okay, I'm getting to the point in time where it's kind of affecting daily tasks. It's affecting me doing, working out, like, a bunch now, where I can't do what I want to do anymore. And so, when I got the MRI done... which I'd kind of known for a while, kind of researching.
Kind of called your meniscus being.
Yeah. And so I kind of knew the meniscus was damaged of some kind, whether it be a tear or whatever, which I kind of knew that based on the research I've kind of looked at it plenty of times. It was probably meniscus was the thing. And it's such a common injury in meniscus. And so did the MRI, went and saw a doctor, and... So obviously meniscus being a problem, that's obviously what I was catching and things of that nature. But because I've dealt with it for the past 3 years, and you know, like I said, I've managed things of that nature, but anytime the meniscus starts to go in general, you're gonna have some type of cartilage damage regardless. And obviously with what I do plus the amount of activity that I do, the cartilage was that much more damaged on the medial side, the inside of my knee.
So it was inside, not the outside, right?
Yeah, the inside of the knee, the medial side. And so, went and saw about 2 or 3 different doctors, kind of different to give opinions on it, and ended up going with a guy in Lafayette to do my surgery.
He's like a knee specialist, right?
Yeah, there's
like all he does.
Yeah, it's like the Louisiana Orthopedic Specialist. Okay. I think is the name of the place, and they have like 20 doctors on staff, and you know each doctor is like a specialist in one individual thing. So you have like one that's a hand doctor, one's an elbow doctor.
Pretty cool though.
One's a shoulder. So that's all they
do. Like if you're going there, like you know you're getting like the good of the good, I guess.
Yeah, like that's all they do is like that one individual body part. And so when I saw that guy, I seemed the most comfortable with him, and obviously the meniscus was being damaged and whatnot. And because of the amount of cartilage damage that I had with the knee, he suggested do a cartilage transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to ask, because I got my follow-up appointment on Monday, and they will, because I don't know the exact details of the cartilage transplant, because apparently there's different versions of cartilage and cartilage transplants that you do. And I got to get the details. So I asked Kaylee, I don't know how many times after surgery, she says, asked probably 14 times, like, what did they do? And she's like, well, they fixed your meniscus. Like, I know, but what did they do? They fixed your cartilage. Like, I'm like, I want to know the details of what exactly went down. And so she couldn't answer this question. So I got to...
I can imagine y'all after surgery be like, what did they do?
And so I got to talk... I got to ask them on Monday, like, exactly what the cartilage
transplant... Because to me, that's the more neat thing.
Well, that's what's kind of holding me up right now, right? Like, a meniscus is not a humongous surgery by any means.
Like, some people are literally
some
walking,
people...
Like,
yeah, unlike Sydney, who was 9 months post-meniscus.
I think
Sydney
was like an anomaly. Like,
yeah.
She took
way outliner.
No comment.
But I mean, most people, I mean, I've heard some people literally, like Trevor had a, I think somebody had a meniscus surgery and was like back running a marathon within 2 weeks.
Who?
Somebody Trevor worked with. Okay. Or worked for, like, came and saw.
They said Trevor.
No,
like,
not Trevor. No, not Trevor himself.
Okay.
And so, for most people, they, after meniscus surgery, can go back to walking and, like, going up steps within, you know, a couple of days sometimes. And so, it's not the meniscus that's really holding me up so much as the cartilage transplant, because of the fact that with this cartilage transplant, you know, essentially it has to grow and set inside the
knee. It's got to be taken your knee before you can start doing shit.
And so I kind of think of it like almost like, you know, you can think of it a couple different ways, but almost like it's like they're planting like a seed, and then like the seed's got to fertilize and grow inside that knee joint. And so that's a process, right? And so that's what's kind of making, obviously, the process take longer compared to if I was just fixing meniscus alone, in which I had played around that idea of just fixing the meniscus. But kind of talking to different people, basically, essentially, if I just were to fix meniscus, not take care of the cartilage, I would gain my range of motion back, obviously, but there would still be some pain inside the knee because of the cartilage damage that occurred from the meniscus tear.
There's still cartilage pain. Right?
Yeah. And so essentially, you know, a way for me to, you know, regain full knee function with little to no pain, this was the best option to go with, right? And so all in all, I'll probably be out, like, be out of everything for about 16 weeks.
Okay.
So at 16 weeks, I should be back, like, to fully doing everything, running, jumping, so on and so forth. Around 6 weeks, to 10 weeks in that range, when I'll kind of get back into doing some squatting and things of that nature.
I like squatting.
Yeah, and be able to bike, and so I should be able to start doing some things here in a couple of weeks, and then like so around like 12 is about the time you kind of like, okay, you're starting to introduce most things, and then by week 16 you should be back to fully
get going. Rock and roll.
Yeah, rock and roll. So all in all, I mean, 4 months to kind of, you know, it should, could be a whole lot worse. Could be shoulder, right? Shoulders take shoulder. Like obviously, you know, with both shoulders being done. So and like
it's,
I have a shoulder
crazy
in high school.
Like in 4 months, you're gonna be like supposedly back and ready to rock.
Supposedly.
That's pretty cool.
Now, I've never heard anybody else get a knee or cartilage transplant, so I guess I'm technically going to be the guinea pig here to determine good or bad here.
Let us know.
But, so we'll see how it goes. But, I mean, all in all, that's kind of the breakdown of kind of how it happened and whatnot. Like I said, it wasn't like an individual instance, as it more so.
It wasn't like you were doing the air squat one day and your knee just like...
Yeah, it wasn't like, there wasn't like one individual thing. And I think maybe if, like, obviously back in the day, if I had that knee swelling, if I'd maybe gone to the doctor, like, immediately around that time, maybe it could, at that time, would have been like, okay, you have a slight meniscus tear, you know, and it could, like, obviously, you know, hindsight's 2020, where if I maybe would have gone that year, I might have had only had like a couple weeks of off instead of 16 weeks off.
Yeah.
You know, if they, at the time, if I'd have taken up it early.
But at that time, you were doing all competing and everything. I feel like you probably didn't want to take any time off.
Well, the only reason why I didn't go at the time was because it was still kind of manageable.
Like, you were able to, like you didn't justify, like, going to get it checked out yet.
Well, if, like, it's like, if I can still do most of the things that I want, like, only some things hurt here or there, I can kind of manage it and deal with it, right? And
the catching was probably the most annoying
part. Well, that was at the very end of it. That's why.
That's like the, I mean, that broke the back, I feel like.
Well, that was the main, that was the only thing that really, like, when it started affecting, like, daily tasks and, like, catching, and, like, okay, I can't really do much working out anymore, then that's when I was like, okay, I have to get something taken care of now. And it's kind of been looming on me for a little while anyways. It's kind of like, because some days it would hurt worse than others. And it's kind of like, do you want to go get checked out? Do I not want to get checked out? Do I want to have surgery? Do I not want to have surgery? And you kind of bounce around with it for a while. And I was starting to get that point in time, but I was kind of getting sick and tired of it hurting me in general. Because, like, for instance, like, I'm on the floor a lot at home, like, changing diapers, changing clothes, whatever like they may be. And, like, so sitting on the floor with my, like, I can't really bend that knee to a full deflection. So that would really kind of start to annoy and piss me off. So it started to wear on me, like, little things like that would start getting old. And so it was something that I was kind of like leaning into anyways, and that was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. And so kind of, I don't say forced me to, but made me say, okay, Nathan, I'm just going to get this thing
go for it
done with and kind of move on from it. So hopefully, like I said, It's right now, and like I said, pain overall has been...
You said pain's pretty low.
I hadn't had really any pain, to be honest. Like, even the swelling has been pretty manageable. Like, I hadn't really had a whole shitload of swelling.
Is it swelling. Like bruise, like crazy bruise, like green and like...
Not really. No. I mean, I got a little bit of bruising, but not bad. I mean, it looks like... I don't know, I mean, if you just see my knee, you would be like, oh, damn, he just has surgery.
Really? Because I remember Sydney's was literally like purple and green, mm-hmm. like for a long time.
No, I mean, it's a little bit bruised, but I mean, they did it arthroscopically, so it's got like a little bit of bruising, but like you wouldn't look at it and be like, damn, what'd you do?
It's not bad.
Yeah. So, So pain's been pretty manageable. It's been more just a pain in the ass and knee thing because right now I can't drive.
You're like locked out in that damn like.
Yeah. So I think I talked to the PT today. I think what he had kind of mentioned, I think what's going to end up happening is like, so I have a follow-up appointment on Monday. And because like next week I can go into more knee flexion. Mm-hmm. So I can bend my knee more next week. And, but this brace is where my leg is locked out, right? Like there's no bending in this brace. So I think what'll happen is I'll go to my appointment on Monday. They'll probably put me into a different brace. Mm-hmm. That has the dials on it where you can adjust
them. It's probably like, it's got like a little circle dial.
Yeah. Thing. And then I think I go to my follow-up appointment. Then I have another follow-up appointment on the six-week mark. And that's the point in time where I can go into full knee flexion. So
I think for me, like 6 weeks was like, they like let you do like cool things in PT. Mm-hmm. That's
so,
a cool thing.
Well, so he said I could do like full knee flexion so I can go down as far as I want with the knee. And go to full weight bearing on the knee
at
6 weeks. So like basically each week progressing up to 6 weeks is like a little bit more weight bearing, a little more knee flexion. Until the last one is obviously at the 6 week, go to full knee flexion and full weight bearing. And then each week thereafter, you're kind of like adding in a little bit more exercising or whatever it may be. So
I could see you being the guy in physical therapy. Like they put you on the bike for the first time and it's like, all right, you have four minutes on the bike.
I asked
and you're like full on like sweat your ass off.
Well, I asked him today, I said, what can I bike? And he goes, well, that really depends on how much knee flexion you can achieve. Depends on first how you can bite.
Okay.
But they have a pull there as well. So I got to ask them on Monday if potentially I can do some pull stuff before like 6 weeks. Because 6 weeks I can go to full weight bearing, right? But he's wondering if I can get in the pool before 6 weeks. Because obviously you're not as much weight bearing when you're in the pool, obviously. And so I got to ask him to see if I can do that. But we'll kind of figure it out.
That'd be kind of cool. Getting in the pool, like walking around and getting like... I don't know. I feel like that'd be neat.
We'll give it a shot. I don't know.
It'd probably feel really weird, but.
Yeah. That's kind of the long story of it all. If you're kind of this far into hearing me bitch about my knee, I guess.
Now, the next time somebody asks me about you, I'm just going to tell them to go listen to
the podcast. Whatever episode
number. Even the view counts up.
We got to start putting numbers on it.
We do got to put numbers on it. That'd be kind of cool.
And so, I think you had other people asking about the structure of the programming or something
Some people are wondering like because sometimes like for instance we had Helen not on
Tuesday
Monday, so it wasn't race day it wasn't Monday race day
it just depends on a little bit you kind of notice that a little bit has been kind of shifted around so like maybe an interval is maybe on Wednesday and not Tuesday or whatever it may be, but the only reasoning for that depending on what I feel like needs to be addressed that week in the way of like the movement patterns will kind of depend on how things kind of get plugged in, if that makes sense. So
depending on what we did like Friday, Saturday is what you're
doing. A little bit to a degree. For instance, I don't want to program two squat days in a row. So like I might have an idea of like what I want to retest for a quote unquote race day, but I want to do this certain interval style workout that also may involve a squatting pattern.
Gotcha.
That I don't really.
So sometimes you can't do that like a Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't want to put that like directly side by side back to back days, and so I want to have a little bit more spacing between those two workouts. So, you might see a little bit of shifting in the way like okay, like maybe we do a repeat workout like a benchmark workout, whether it be Helen or a level method test or just an old workout that might be on Tuesday instead of Monday, right? Or an interval workout on Monday instead of Tuesday, whatever it may be. And so it just depends on how things are kind of falling that week. And I might have to shift like what we will call like an interval day to like a different day of the week. And that's the only reason, just because it's, like I said, I don't want to repeat too many movement patterns repetitively.
We're not trying to front squat and thrust it the next day.
Yeah, ideally. Like, we do try to squat at least somewhere 2 to 3 times a week, essentially. But ideally, I don't want the squats to be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Yeah. But that is a little bit of a myth in the way of, like, you know the typical old school bodybuilding, like, you know, you really hit one set, like hit legs like once a week, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have to give it like X amount of days to recover.
7 days to recover.
Yeah, there's a little bit of myth to that to a degree. You know, because I stuck to that protocol forever in my mind as well.
Well, now they do like, they have like 2 or 3 days, but like their first day would be like a heavier day and their second day would be like a more like lighter hypertrophy day.
Yeah, because a lot of people will say, well, you can't work out the same muscle group 2 days in a row. And that's not necessarily a true statement anymore. Now, there is a dumb way to go about doing it, right? Like, you're not going to sit there and do 20 sets of back squats on Monday and then, you know, the next day you're coming in and you're doing front squats and thrusters, right? That's probably not your best bet. And we're not doing enough in the way of like total volume in the way of like back squatting sets to like say, okay, we couldn't squat the next day if we really wanted to, right? So like we're not
overloading it.
We're not doing 10 sets of back squats at one individual setting. And so, you know, we're doing movements that's not necessarily like always directly correlated. So like, for instance, like a thruster, yeah, thruster is also a squat, but it's also a press. You know, so you're doing a multi-joint press movement where you're involving multiple aspects into one. And depending on how they're paired up as well can completely change the stimulus of workout. So like, have you ever done like handstand push-ups and thrusters?
Yeah.
All of a sudden your legs don't feel that bad anymore during thrusters.
Oh,
it's all, cause like, it's hard to hold the front rack position. It's hard to lock out. So it all depends on how you're pairing up the movement. It really depends on how it feels a lot of times.
The stimulus of the workout.
And so, and that's what I kind of mean by that. Like, you know, if we do, like for instance, right now, we're kind of back squatting on Mondays. If I program.
Which, by the way, you made a lot of people angry this week.
Why?
Because everybody's legs are toast.
Dude, people's legs are toast.
The amount of bitching I've heard about their legs being sore is absolutely.
And it seemed like Monday put everybody in a hole.
Oh, dude, Monday started the week off just like, we started off on a roll. That's pretty much what happened. Like, Jacob, have you talked to Jacob this week?
Well, this so happened, I was hitting like an Instagram reel, and it had to do about, you know, skipping leg day and doing arm day, and he goes, that's you're actually what true like today. That. Yeah. Dude. Well, it was like on Tuesday, and he's like, that's actually what I did today.
So, I think he came in on Tuesday or Wednesday, and someone touched his legs. And he was like, dude, you can't touch my legs. He's like, they're too sore right now.
He did the back squats, I'm assuming? Okay. I think that AMRAP really trashed some people.
Oh, I think so.
Because...
Well, even though 6 reps, though, like, 6 reps is, like, an aggressive... Mm-hmm. It's... That'll do you in.
Well, and that's kind of the swing in programming on the strength side that we've kind of done. Because in a way of a pure strength standpoint, a lot of the things that we do kind of fall in that 5 or less rep range. Mm-hmm. Because at least by the literature of, you know, if you look at things like what's the most optimal way to get stronger, it usually falls between 1 and 5. Right? For the most optimal way to get strong. So we're not working in that like pure strength protocol. Can you get stronger going past 5 reps? Sure. But our protocol right now that we're structuring ourselves, which, you know, I talked about in that Facebook Live video I did like 2 weeks ago, is the squat endurance test. It's kind of what we're aiming for here. So that involves higher volume of sets. So we're not quite used to doing stuff like that. And that's, it's just a different stimulus that we're providing you. Because obviously you guys have squatted thousands of times at this point in time. And you've done heavy squats. And you've done a shitload of squats at one time, whether it be like wall balls, thrusters, back squat, front squats, whatever it may be. But the percentage loading for that kind of rep volume is it's different. And so that's why you're getting so much soreness right now, is because it's just a different kind of stimulus we're kind of providing. So it's a little bit more on that quote unquote like hypertrophy leg endurance size where we're kind of at right now. But wait until we start going to those sets of 10.
I know.
In about
2 weeks. I go, well, if the sets of 6 are doing this to you, wait until like 2 weeks. Give it like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, because the way the programming, so we'll go 3 weeks of like these sets of 6s. We'll do like these sets of 6s with the AMRAPs at the end, and then the 4th week of the structure, we'll go to like straight sets of 10.
Tens.
So we'll just like, it'll be at certain percentages at just 10 reps across the board every time. That's going to be even
worse.
And it's always worse when you're doing AMRAPs with like back squatting, because it's such a mental thing.
Dude, man, there's so many people like last week that would like rack the bar and they still looked good, but it was just like they were defeated, like, yeah, like up top.
Yes.
And it's like you have another 2-3 reps.
Well, if you do like something like a bench press or a strict press,
well, you fail out.
Like, you can fail.
Yeah.
But like when you come to like a back squat,
you can grind a back squat out.
Dude, like that's why like the leg endurance test is so miserable, because you can be at like rep 12 and be like, I don't know if I can make it. And like, every rep feels like a warrant max, but like, there's a good chance you can probably get there if you can mentally get over the hurdle.
So the funny thing about the squat endurance test is, I don't know if I told you about this, but Josh DeVilia, he was doing it.
Okay.
And so he's doing it at 6 o'clock, and he's on like rep, like, I think like 16 or 17.
Oh, shit.
And he's starting to kind of like grind through it, right?
Okay.
And the funny thing is, first off, he thought he was doing one weight, but the guy he was with snuck some fives on there. So okay. He was actually doing 10 pounds heavier than okay. He thought. And so he gets like rep 16 or 17, I don't really remember. And then all of a sudden he's like grinding it out the hole. And all of a sudden you see his gum just like
shoot across
the fucking rig. And so it just like phoom, just flies. And everybody starts laughing. He's like trying not to laugh, but he's like struggling. So he's like on rep 17 and you can see his face turning like purple red.
Oh, man.
And he gets done and he just drops to his knees and he just starts laughing. I'm like, dude, I don't know how you held on to that, because I would have done.
So you got all 20?
He got all 20.
Okay.
But I was like, dude, if that was me, I'd have done busted out laughing, dropped the bar, like no chance I'd finish it.
That shit's funny. Have you heard the Lacey story, which he did the squat endurance test? This is back in the day.
It's like, I don't know.
So we did we started introducing the level method in 2019, I think.
Yeah.
It was pre-COVID. And so the coaching staff went through all the testing protocol before the gym mm-hmm. did. And so Lacey was doing the squat endurance test, and you know how she is. She wants to try to get one of the top level scores. And so, dude, she's doing like 90 some percent of her max back squat. I remember watching her, and she did almost like the second or third rep, and already looked
rough.
Like a 1 hour max back squat. I said, there's no way she's going to make it. And she freaking got all 20. Got it. Dude, it was like 97% of her back squat. And
I wish you timed it.
Oh, God. I can only imagine how long.
Like, how long?
It probably had to be.
Like, 3 minutes?
3-4 minutes with that bar on her back, dude. It took forever.
That's tough.
And the next day, Sarah Bell said something to her, like, Lacey, that was so motivating. That was so amazing to watch you do that. Like, I'm so inspired, blah, blah, blah. And Lacey goes, we have the hemorrhoids to say it otherwise.
I really shouldn't have done that.
That's when you know you push your body to a whole new level. You're starting to get the hemorrhoids.
That's impressive, though. That is super impressive. Sometimes she'll do some stuff, and I'm like, that's super impressive.
No, I mean, but she's one of those body types where, you know, she, if you give her something like 95% of her max, she can do it for multiple reps.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You take somebody, like, for instance, like maybe like Brandy, where you give her 95% of her 1 hour max in a workout, she's not moving it the same way Lacey would for her 95%. Like, obviously, Brandy's a way more pure strength athlete, where she's purely going to be able to lift more weight than Lacey will, but Lacey's built more like a endurance, like, runner kind of person, where she's more like enduring, so to speak, where she can do a lot of volume at a certain high percentage. But if you have somebody where they're maybe more of a fast twitch muscle fiber type of guy, like take somebody like Brandon Allen,
mm-hmm.
where he has some more football background, like pure fast type 1 muscle fiber, like very explosive, where he's going to be super strong. But now if you give him high amount of reps at a percentage of his current weight, he's gonna struggle with that, compared to somebody who's more of an endurance athlete, where maybe they're not the strongest type of person, but they can just lift their weights multiple times at like a higher percentage for them.
Yeah.
That's kind of how the body structure wise, right? And so
sometimes I feel like the people like Lacey are kind of like more impressive than the like an absolute just like 1 rep max.
Why say that?
I just think it's cool. I just think it's cool to like do 90-95% of your max
for that many reps
and be comfortable with it and not like struggle with it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times even those people can like, they can normally do their 1 rep max like, not regularly, but like it's not like a big deal if they hit it.
Well, if you kind of like nerd out on some like exercise science kind of stuff, they'll even talk about that to a degree, where sometimes you'll have athletes where they can train in like the 70-80 percentile range and still see massive improvements in their strength and hypertrophy. And you have people like Lacey where for her, training at 70-80% won't do hardly anything for her. Like, she has to train.
Like, she's got
to
push it.
She has to train at, like, 90% pretty much, like, for most of her working sets, for her to see the strength benefits that you would want to see from somebody wanting to improve in that particular field. So it's weird in that retrospect how you can have those different body types. And depending on what kind of body type you are, will kind of depend on, you know, what's going to be the best structure for you to improve upon certain metrics, right? And so, I mean, you always have to be more of a, especially something like this, where we're trying to have a class program, it's more of a, like a general style, like, okay, what's going to be the biggest way for us to, you know, for everybody in the gym to see the most benefit, right? And you have to kind of shoot in the middle, so to speak, mm-hmm. where, you know, you kind of take the person, okay, you take this general average avatar of a person where, you know, let's say they have okay-ish strength and okay-ish endurance. Okay, like you just kind of right in the middle, and it's not a blanket. You're making a blanket program out of that, and so I don't know where I was going with that, but you can't individualize that approach yeah. to them. So because most of our percentage work, depending on where we're at, will kind of range between 80% and 90%. You know, for most people, because that's where you're gonna see most of your bang for your buck and weight, like strength wise. Now, right now we're kind of like a little bit lower in that 70 percentile range for the like endurance protocol and the hypertrophy protocol that we're kind of in right now to kind of work up to the like endurance.
Another day that everybody was bitching about was the strict pull up and push up day.
Mm-hmm.
People were thinking you were off your rocker, thinking they could do 65% of their push ups.
Well, he was like, I do 24.
Oh my God, Shaw yesterday was like, there's no way I can do 28. He's like, there's no way. I'm like, Shaw, you did like 50 unbroken. Like, I know you.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's super impressive.
You said there's like four or five guys.
There's a bunch of guys that did like 50. Like Cody Davis did like 50.
That's
like,
impressive.
There's a bunch of guys that did 50.
Now, were they doing like 50 consecutive, like without stopping?
Like for instance, like Cody Davis.
Because we put a sequence on, like, you can't rest the top
so
more than 2 seconds.
So every class I coached, I made sure they know, like, I told them they couldn't rest at the top, and I told them they couldn't rock. So, like, it was continuous motion.
Has to be pretty much continuous.
And, dude, Cody Davis was rolling the whole time. And did it, like, fast. Like,
really?
At no point in time
that's
did he
impressive.
Really, like, struggle. Like, I was impressed.
I couldn't do 50, personally.
Dude, that's a lot of push-ups, dude.
I can maybe...
Good push-ups, that's a lot of push-ups.
Yeah, I'm probably more like a 30 range guy.
30? I wish Jake would do it. I bet Jake could break 60.
Ooh, man. Yeah, he'd probably break 60, 70 in that range.
For sure.
I bet you at one time he could probably get close to 100.
You think so?
In his prime, back when he was like really training that way.
Bench pressing on that?
Yeah. He may not as good as he used to be at it, but I wonder if you could ask him. He'd probably push close to 100.
I bet asking Jake that type of question, he's saying yes. Jake, can you do 3,000 push-ups in a row? No doubt.
Does that... So, I've had this conversation before with people. Do you feel like, for instance, like you have somebody who, and I've never been like that quite a person where, like, I'll kind of second guess myself to a degree. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, compared to like somebody who's like, hell yeah,
I can do that.
No problem.
See,
I'm a little bit envious of those kind of people who I'm like, I wish I kind of had that a little bit of confidence in myself to say, hell yeah, I can do that. No problem. Like, I can do this shit. No problem.
That was never me.
That me personally, no. Even if I felt like a workout, I was kind of like in my wheelhouse. I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I'm about to crush this
dude,
shit.
It could be the perfect workout for me, but I'm still going to go into
push jerks and handstand push ups.
Yeah, you could give me that workout and say, all right, kill. Do this workout.
This is your
fast,
workout.
You can do it. I'm going to probably go into it thinking like, oh, I got to break this up a whole lot. And then I'll get into it. And it's like, you're just cruising. Like you just turn all that away and you just rock and roll. So I always felt like for me, it was like, I would always go into them like kind of shy and like cautious about it.
That's
and then
how
I get in the middle of it and I'm like, oh, this is not that bad actually. And you kind of rock.
Well, you kind of have that self doubt a little bit to a degree. Like, I don't know if I can.
But I feel like you have to have that going into workouts.
What? A little bit of caution?
Like, especially CrossFit. Like, you can't just go into every CrossFit workout thinking, I'm going to smash this, you know?
I don't know. Like, and that's where that psychological standpoint comes into play of... And you can add, like, for instance, like, using Jacob as an example of somebody who is very confident and scared at times. That it more often than not probably backfired, but mm-hmm. there are some workouts where obviously it paid dividends.
Oh, for sure.
You know, you take a workout like...
They get Randy or something like 75 power
something where he's like,
right?
I'm going to go full send with
yeah.
it, right? That those type of people, it can pay off. I'll say more often than not, it doesn't pay mm-hmm. off because more often than not, in most CrossFit workouts, you're having to pace or structure a certain way to break things up to have the best
sure.
output of a workout. But every so often, it does pay off to have that.
But when
that
it does work out, they beat everybody by like a whole minute or like 2 minutes, and like they just destroy everybody.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know where that balance is. Like, obviously, I think you do have to have a degree. Like, if you look at anybody the best in the world in any sport, there's a little bit of like cockiness there without doubt. Like, and I don't know, some have been worse than others, I guess, throughout lifetimes. But there's definitely that sense of like, I'm the man, and I can crush anybody in this room.
Okay, we'll take it like this then. Like, so for instance, like,
but do you feel like that's like that's your, okay, if I was Matt Frazier,
yeah,
I could feel like I could be like
for
that.
Sure.
But I don't know, like for me personally, like as somebody who's not a CrossFit Games athlete, not Matt Frazier, I'm not going to be like, fuck yeah, I can crush everybody here. Like, I'm not, I don't know. This
but
is
like weird. If I were to like say, hey, gave you like your most perfect workout, right? Let's say I gave you like chest bar pull-ups and something else that you really love. Like, you're probably going to go into that workout thinking like, I have a good shot at like beating everybody in this workout, right?
You might be more confident in yourself to say, okay, these.
Like, you're more okay, willing everybody to go has, to the dark yeah, place so, in that workout.
Yeah, I guess right. So. I think you have less caution, mm-hmm. so to speak. So you're more willing to kind of, I guess, attack the workout because you're more confident in your abilities of those particular movements.
That's kind of like how I was. Like, if it was something that, like, I was really confident.
You like these movements. You feel confident in these movements.
I'm confident enough to trust myself to go fast. Like, to just mm-hmm. go. And, like, you
yeah.
kind of turn it off.
Compared to something that was, like, deadlifts and running.
Exactly. And that workout, I'd probably be like, all right, I got to be cautious today. Like, I got to, like, mm-hmm. like really get my head right before I go into this workout.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like that can be somewhat of a limiter to you performing better in the future? Like, for instance, knowing that's a weak point for you mm-hmm. and saying, because of that fact, these are not good movements for me, and you're more tentative about the workout, and you're like, okay, I'm going to break things up more, I'm going to pace things out more because I struggle with these individual movements, that in the long run, to a degree, that prohibits you from getting better at those movements. You understand?
Yeah.
You understand where I'm going with that question?
I would feel that way, yeah.
I feel like that sometimes a lot of people is that because of the fact that, you know, everybody has movements that they like and they dislike, mm-hmm. but, you know, more often than not, movements that you like are things that you're good at, and things that you dislike are things that you're not good at. It's not very often that somebody's really good at a movement and they hate the movement.
Well, I think it's also like how you attack the workouts. Like, let's say, for instance, you give me deadlifts, which, if you know me, that's top two least favorite things in CrossFit, right? So, I hate deadlifts, but let's say you give me, like, deadlifts on run and double unders. I might go, like, a little bit slower on the run and double unders to attack the deadlifts, right? If I know the workout's deadlifts. So, like, I'll take some off the first two movements. That way, I know when I get to the deadlift bar, I don't mm-hmm. have to lazily go through it and kind of go through it slowly. I can attack the deadlift bar, mm-hmm. I feel like.
So you're kind of pacing everything around the movement that you're bad at.
Yeah.
To a degree.
Because, like, if you're bad at deadlifts, if you're going to mm-hmm. go ham on the run and double unders, you don't have anything to give on the deadlift, I feel like. So then you never get better, mm-hmm. I feel like. So that's my two cents right there.
And I feel like that's where you have to have the mindset of, like, training versus competing.
Yeah, for sure.
To a degree. I think if you're always looking at a workout where if deadlifts, using an example as deadlifts, where deadlifts always pop in the workout, and that's a movement that you're not very confident in, that you do not like, and you're always pacing things out based off the deadlift, then that's, if you always train a certain gear, that's how the gear is always going to be. Compared to if you can go with the mindset of, I know this isn't my best movement, but for today, I'm trying to shoot for unbroken sets on the deadlift, right? Yeah. Even though I hate this movement, I'm not the greatest at this movement, my goal today is to try to shoot for unbroken sets, or only two sets when I would normally want to break this up into three sets.
Correct.
Whatever it may be. Even though that might not even be reflective of me getting a better score because of
but
it.
But for you, that person, that day, you got better, right?
Exactly, right? It's allowing me to improve upon my weakness, because if I'm always doing singles on deadlifts, right, that might, for instance, maybe gives me a better score, but am I essentially going to get better at deadlifts because of it?
Probably not,
right? So it's understanding of taking time to say, okay, I'm quote-unquote competing, I'm trying to get the best score, and quote-unquote, I'm trying to improve upon my weaknesses to get better at this movement for in the future.
That way in 3-6 months, like, I can actually
exactly.
feel good about that workout.
Yeah, and I think that so many people, a lot of times, is that they'll cut the corner to get a better time for this individual day, but in all actuality, they didn't take the step forward to improve upon the fitness to actually improve in the future for this one individual.
Like, look ahead, don't stay right in that moment, right? You're planning for the future.
Exactly, right? Like, maybe you have to fix a technical flaw in your deadlift that you're doing currently, and it feels harder to perform the deadlift because you're making this technical shift in your movement, But we know, but you know in the back of your head, and as a coach, you know that, okay, if I make this fix, even though it might feel tougher for me now, 6 months down the road, it'll be better because of it. But I decide another workout that I'm not going to do that because I just want to try to get a better time mm-hmm. because Bob on the side of me, who's my buddy, is beating me and I don't like that. And so I'm going to say, screw it, I'm going to go back to my old form because this feels better and easier right now. And I just want to get through the workout.
Yep.
Right? You're not improving upon yourself as a person and as an athlete to where down the road you can obviously get better because of it. That's where we're kind of getting out of the conversation. And so I think a lot of times as when we get into the workout, sometimes we can have that tendency to want to do that where we're just trying to get through a workout, either A or B, we're trying to beat somebody, or C, you're trying to get a certain score on a certain workout, and you're willing to cut those corners to accomplish that sometimes. When in all actuality, you should kind of take a step back and kind of analyze, all right, in the long run, is that what's really going to benefit me to see my best results 6 months from now? And that's kind of the same thing like with my knee. Like, I've kind of sat on it for a while, but I kind of got that point in time, like, okay, if I really want to ever get better at my fitness, I'm going to have to take care of this mm-hmm. one way or the other.
Like, just let it ride. Like,
I can't continue to let it ride. I gotta make the change now, even though it sucks in the short term right now. Like, it's more of a pain in the ass. It's more for long term gain than short term pain.
For sure.
And
that's like a good little phrase.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've heard that one.
I mean, I even remember when I was changing my rope climb technique, the first few times were horrible. Like, I was bobbling all over the place trying to get my rope climb technique down. Rope climbs felt 10 times harder. Fucking people were passing me up left and right. And it's aggravating as hell when you do that, when you're having to change up a technique, or you're trying to change something about yourself to improve, but you know it's going to slow you down. It's very mind fucking, I guess is kind of the word to say. But you got to kind of stay in your own lane at times. And, you know, I had this conversation with Sydney the other day as well, because we were kind of talking about her post-quarterfinals and things of that nature. And, you know, I think sometimes people can get wrapped up into, you know, beating somebody or getting certain scores and things of that nature. You put all this pressure and anxiety on yourself to, like, do well in workouts. When you can start to really sit back and analyze your own state and being in a middle of workout and focus on your own self-talk during the workout, and not focus on what everybody else is doing, can go such a long ways. Mm-hmm. I know I've talked about this in the podcast before, but I know for me personally, like 2016 area was like a year where like I kind of struggled in the gym a little bit because I was always in a constant state of like comparison, like I should be here, but I'm not here kind of deal compared to like other people. And then like 2017 was, I just kind of focused on that year being more of a mental shift of like not concentrating so much on what anybody else is doing and like concentrating on just me personally and like what I'm doing each individual workout, even if I didn't feel quote unquote good or felt like I was more sluggish that day or feel like I didn't like, oh, this isn't how I should be for me. I kind of would quickly shift that mindset to like just focus on like what individual effort I could give that individual day and how much, you know, what my attitude was for that individual session and not getting so wrapped up into it and like being proud of that more so than like the actual output. And I ended up having like my best year in the way like the CrossFit Open that I ever had that year because of that. Because I think sometimes we can get so wrapped up into like one individual session that it didn't necessarily go that your way, and you can like start to second guess yourself all the time. And those thoughts are automatic. Like, you can't control like what pops into your head.
Yeah.
Like, you can't control like when you're doing a clean.
Can't shut it off.
You go do a clean and you miss a clean, or you do a back squat and the back squat feels heavy. You can't stop that initial thought that pops in your head, like, kind of like, quote, you suck, or why am I weak, or whatever that thought pops into your head. But you do have control over that quick mindset shift of how you kind of take that information and then interpret it into a certain way or another, where I can take that information and focus on, okay, well, if I'm missing the clean right now, maybe my sleep was thrown off that day, or just focus on, okay, maybe shift the weight down just a little bit today because of the fact that maybe my technique's awful. Let me go back and feel myself. And re-gearing your mindset to focus on, like I said, the effort and your attitude you're giving that individual session and not getting so wrapped up in, like, the end result all the time. I think, obviously, you have to look at, you know, what path you're going down and analyze that and make sure you are obviously taking the steps in the right direction that you want to go and like retesting and things of that nature to make sure, okay, I'm on the right path. But you can't always get so concerned with every little individual thing in each session going wrong and then saying, okay, well, I'm not on the right path. I have to just focus on one individual session at a time. And if I keep plugging away at that way, then obviously I'll reach my goal in the long run. But I think sometimes we get really wrapped up in like one individual session being bad, like that completely is like ruins the whole week, or ruins the whole training session, and make obviously training not that fun because of it. That's what happened to me personally. I don't know where we're kind of going with all that.
No, I like it.
But anyways, so where are we into this podcast? Like 45 minutes now?
Are we really?
Yeah. Anything else you want to...
I didn't know we were going for that.
Anything else you want to jam on, or are we good now?
I think that's solid.
Okay. So, honestly, no individual topic today. We're just kind of more bullshitting more than anything. Well, I guess I'll call this the bullshitting podcast. Mm-hmm. And so, if you guys made this far, we're back again. Hopefully, we stay consistent with the podcast again. I was just kind of out for a little bit of time last week because of the knee and everything else. So, if you guys got any podcasting tips on how to make this shit sound a little bit better, you can always let us know. And we'll try to improve upon it from there. But we'll talk to you guys next time.
See you.